Aren't you glad you're a Christian? Well, I want to thank all those, Logan and Kenny, and all those who organized the family game night and the lock-in, those who brought food, and for the lights for getting up early and cooking for breakfast and all the different things. It was a lot of fun last night. I didn't stay all the whole time, but it was good. All right, someone is surely going to notice, and so I have to say this. Yesterday morning, I hadn't had my coffee yet. I was still in a fog, and I was trying to back up, and sure enough, broke my side mirror off of my car. And so I guess that's one to add to my list of resolutions for this year. Don't do that again. Can you believe, though, that we've already come upon a new year? I mean, the new year really shows us how quickly our lives are moving. How many more New Years do we have? Well, no, it may not be many. And so we got to make sure to use this one to really make the most of this next year. And there are really three directions that we can take for this next year in our growth and in our progress. And this, of course, applies to everyone, myself included, and it applies to just every area of our lives. Well, we can take this path to the right, and that's going to keep us at the same level. All right, it represents us doing the same things that we've always done. All right, without stretching ourselves in any way. We're going to be moving all right, but, well, not growing. We can take this path to the left, and, this is actually going to take us back. It's the law of atrophy. If you don't use it, you lose it. See, this is the lazy path, where we're not even maintaining what we've learned and accomplished up to this point. And then, of course, we can take this middle path that goes up ahead. This is the most difficult, but it's also the most rewarding. This is the pathway of growth and accomplishment. And it seems that most human beings really like new beginnings, and they like getting a fresh start. And for many of us, the new year represents one of these. See, every year around this time, people are setting these New Year's resolutions, and they're trying to better themselves in some way, either physically, financially, mentally, or spiritually. We're looking to see what needs to be changed in our lives and in order to improve ourselves. And we're dreaming about the future and we're setting goals that we want to accomplish in this next year. And well, all these New Year's resolutions, what it does is it shows that most people really do want to go up this middle path, don't they? They really do want to fulfill their greatest potential. And these dreams of going up the middle path, they're really very important because dreams, they give us a vision of a better future. They give us direction in our life, and they keep us feeling alive. As it's been said, they nourish the spirit. And the most successful people in life are men and women of vision who, well, they dare to dream big. For example, Conrad Hilton, okay? He had a dream to be the best hotel man in history, and he founded the Hilton Hotel Empire. And after just about, you know, almost going out of business during the Depression, okay, he went down to one hotel and being in debt. Well, out of that, he grew it into one of the largest private companies in the United States. And today, owning over 4,000 hotels in over 100 countries. Now, listen to what he said. If you're going to do big things, you have to first think big thoughts. In one interview, his son described him as, well, a positive thinker who believed if you think positive, positive things will result. All right, so what's the problem? Well, the problem is how many of our dreams and New Year's resolutions are actually fulfilled? I mean, if we could list all of the New Year's resolutions just from the people in this room that didn't get accomplished, all right, that would be pretty substantial, wouldn't it? The list would be pretty large. So what's it going to take? All right, well, it's obviously more than just dreaming about it. Well, Hilton put it like this. Achievement seems to be connected with action. Successful men and women keep moving. They make mistakes, but they don't quit. Or as Vance Havner said it, the vision must be followed by the venture. It's not enough to stare up the steps. We must step up the stairs. You see, you're going to have to be hard-headed and persistent. You're going to have to get up when you fall down. Well, you're going to have to keep your eyes on the goal and envision how you're going to feel when you achieve it. And you're going to have to set reachable goals with attainable deadlines. You're going to have to plan your time and determine your priorities. You're going to have to get off the couch and when you don't want to and say no to certain things. This is going to take self-discipline. You're going to have to minimize interruptions and conquer procrastination. And you're going to have to be willing to take risks. You see, some people are so afraid of failure that they never try anything. And so we got to accept the fact that, well, you're going to sometimes fail along the way. And you just, well, you treat those failures as an unavoidable yet vital component in your quest. And turn the stumbling blocks into stepping stones. Yep. That's quite a price to pay, isn't it? But if you don't, you're going to end up here or back here. And the results are not very lofty. I mean, do you and I really want to fulfill our greatest potential? God has, He has created us with such great potential. Now, this is the way to reach any goal. This is the way to accomplish any New Year's resolution. But what I want to talk about this morning is the New Year's resolution that every Christian should be making. And that's the dream to move forward spiritually, to look more like Jesus by the end of 2017. This is the direction in which God wants us to go. You see, the Hebrew writer, well, he was apparently upset and suggested that his audience, that his readers had become dull of hearing and sluggish and that they were not growing spiritually. In chapters 5 and 6. So today what I want to do is propose two ways for the Christian to avoid this. And that's seeing each day as a gift from God and using each day as a gift from God. Now keep in mind, this sermon is just as much for me. So number one, seeing each day as a gift from God. Now there are two verses that I want us to remember. The first one is found in Psalm 118. This is the day which the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And the second one is Lamentations, from Lamentations 3. The Lord's loving kindnesses indeed never cease, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. Now, you know that excitement and that anticipation you get when you're opening a present? As some people, they feel that they just can't wait another second, so they just ferociously tear the paper off. Well, you see, I think that's the excitement and the anticipation that we should feel when starting each new day. Now, we want to know what the things are that the Lord has in store for us. You know, each day, it's kind of like this box covered in wrapping paper. And in that box, there are some different things that the Lord has selected for us in love. And, well, they may not all be fun and enjoyable, but I believe that there are things in there that are precisely what we need. You see, as a child, I wasn't exactly thrilled about opening a present that had socks in it or a toothbrush, okay? But the thing is, I still needed them, and they were useful. See, sometimes the day is filled with trials and difficulties, and nobody enjoys getting these. But we can still rejoice and be glad in this day. Because like those socks, you see, this gift is what I need, and it is useful. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, it says, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." You know, the sayings are true. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And people are like diamonds. They must be treated roughly in order to make them shine. You see, difficult training just makes the athlete stronger and faster and more skillful. Every battle you go through, that just makes you more seasoned. And yeah, sometimes God will allow Satan to pull a Job on us. And our entire world just comes crashing down. Now, when that happens, we have a choice. It can make us bitter or better. See, Satan, he wants us to give up. But God wants us to pass the test, and he wants us to grow from it. Well, according to James, you see, this gift is going to produce endurance in us. Do you want to be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing? Well, then this is the gift for you. See, C.S. Lewis, he would say it like this. You know, he'd say that the difficulties and the trials, well, that's the chisel by which God perfects us. In the movie Shadowlands, his character put it like this. We are like blocks of stone from which the sculptor carves a form. The blows of his chisel, which hurt us so much, are what makes us perfect. I read about a man who blamed God and missed 3 months of church because a drought destroyed his crops. And, well, the preacher or an elder came to him and said this. God knows that while it is impossible to grow good grain with a drought, it is also impossible to grow good men without a drought. God's object is to grow men, not grain. See, when seen from the Bible's perspective, the Bible's viewpoint, suffering, well, and difficulties, they're often good things that are preparing us for eternity. For I learn as the years roll onward and leave the past behind, that much I have counted sorrow, but proves that our God is kind. That many a flower I longed for had a hidden thorn of pain, and many a rugged bypath led to fields of golden grain. So the heart from the hardest trial gains the purest joy of all, and the lips that have tasted sadness, the sweetest songs that fall. Then as joy comes after sorrow, and love's the reward of pain, so after earth is heaven, and out of our loss is gain. John Henry Newman. Now, as a side note, okay, according to James chapter 1 and verse 13, the temptations to sin, now those do not come from God, but in those temptations there is a promise. 1 Corinthians 10:13, as it says, no temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptations will provide the way of escape also, that you may be able to endure it. All right, next, similar to the last one, there are times when we find discipline from the Lord in a day. And who in the world enjoyed being spanked as a child or being grounded or put in a timeout or given extra chores or something like that? Now, grab a Bible if you would. Let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 12. I want to show you what the Hebrew writer had to say about this. Now, his recipients, they seem to have been on the verge of giving up. And so he wrote this book to encourage, to exhort them. Well, in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 4 through 11, it says, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet, to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. God is not portrayed in the scriptures as a soft, doting grandpa with one eye shut, but as a father. And a father's loving care involves discipline. It involves chastening. Now, I don't pretend to understand exactly how and when God does this. I mean, each person is going to need it differently and at different times and in different ways. And it may come in the form of a trial or a loss, something to wake us up. I don't know. But it's definitely not pleasant at the time. Now, when our parents disciplined us, they did their best all right, but, you know, I mean, they weren't perfect. They made some mistakes in their discipline. Sometimes parents over-discipline. They overdo it. Sometimes they underdo it. I mean, I'm sure some of you, like me, were disciplined for and punished for something your siblings did. And I've certainly had to apologize to my kids for, you know, more than once. But God, on the other hand, now he is the father of spirits who does not make mistakes. See, he truly disciplines us for our good in order to make us holy. Now, when we mature, we start to understand a little bit more about these things that we find in our box. And you see, now as an adult, I don't mind getting socks and a toothbrush. In fact, I may even ask for them. Well, sometimes we open that box and it's filled with, well, you know, those new toys that we've been dreaming about the whole year, and all of our friends are going to be jealous. You see, some days are filled with physical blessings, and of course we all enjoy these. Matthew 6:33, after talking about food and clothing, Jesus said, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." You see, he gives us all things that we need for the here and now, for our earthly sojourn, when we put him first. Now, let's turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 9. I could be wrong, but to me, all right, it sounds as if Paul told the Corinthians that if they use their money for God, that God would bless them with more money to use for him. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 through 11. Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. As it is written, he scattered abroad, he gave to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God. You see, he is a giving God. Paul told the wealthy Christians in Ephesus that he richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. 1 Timothy 6:17. Now, of course, they were just warned to use their riches for good and not to put their trust in them and their hope in them. Well, we can also find days with spiritual blessings. And of course, I would say that these are by far the richest. I mean, how wonderful is it when you come into a new understanding of God's word? I mean, maybe a question that you've had for years, it's finally been answered. Maybe you watched a Christian movie that was actually well made, and it was well done, and so it really encouraged you. Or maybe you spent some good time in prayer, and that really comforted you, gave you some peace. As we read about in Philippians chapter 4, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. You know, there are some days that I come out of the worship assembly just leaping for joy on the inside. I don't do it on the outside because I get funny looks. But I do it on the inside. And another thing, though, I think one of the best is when you teach someone the gospel and they tell you that they're ready to commit their life to Christ and to be baptized into him. But whatever we find in a day, we can know that we probably needed it in some way, and we can rejoice. James 1:17, it tells us that every good thing bestowed and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. That is how we need to see the things that we find in our box each day. Now, another aspect of seeing each day as a gift from God is knowing then that we have a stewardship with it. How will we respond? I mean, I certainly believe in free choice. See, we are responsible. We're going to have to give an account for everything God has placed into our hands. As it's been said, we don't really own, we manage. Now, I'm sure you remember the parable of the talents in Matthew 25 about the man. He went on the journey and he left different amounts of money in his servant's care, and it was a stewardship. You see, when he returned, well, they had to give an account, and he expected a return. Now, Paul, in speaking of the stewardship of the mysteries of God in which he was entrusted, said in 1 Corinthians 4:2, "In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy." Now, I believe this applies to everything that God has placed into our hands. Our money, our possessions, our jobs, our families, our talents and abilities, our time. I mean, even our time. We're to be good stewards with whatever God has given to us. We are to work on it. We're to increase it. We're to use it for Him. God demands a return on His investment in us. Well, I think that we need to start looking at each day that way and seeing it as a stewardship. Could God find you and me trustworthy with each day that He's given us? And that brings me to my next point, using each day as a gift from God. Now, the first question we need to ask ourselves is, are we using our time wisely? Ephesians 5, 15 and 16, it says, "Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil." Now, all of us have got the same amount of time in a day, right? 24 hours, 1,440 minutes, 86,400 seconds. Now, the thing is, money, well, that can be put in the bank, but not time. And you can call time in a game, but you can't call it in life. So we either use it or we lose it forever. Now, somebody thought they were pretty clever. They put this ad in a periodical. "Lost, a golden hour studded with 60 diamond minutes. No reward offered, for it is lost forever." You see, procrastination and misuse of time can have pretty serious consequences. And as it's been said, procrastination never won a race, received a promotion, or changed the outcome of any situation. So we can't get back the wasted hours of the past, but we can resolve to make the most of our time from here on out. So how do we do this? Well, first, by setting priorities. As you know, not everything that we do has equal value. And so if we're going to accomplish what's truly important to our lives, what's truly important to God, well, then we need to know what's important and what's not. And so priorities help us to know what is and what is not important for the present moment. Now, you remember Jesus, and he's teaching there in Mark chapter 3, and his family is trying to come to see him. And, well, you remember the situation. "Who are my mother and my brothers?" See, some things have to take priority. Jesus, well, he put the spiritual over the physical. Second, by planning our time and how we're going to accomplish those priorities. As the saying goes, you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And one of my mentors frequently told me that an hour that is not planned is often wasted. And that seems to be true. You remember the book of Proverbs talks a lot about planning and getting advice and things like that. And third, by prayer. I mean, we need to consider the Lord. So let's turn over now to James chapter 4 and take a look at that passage. It's a fairly well-known passage here. Now, the problem here, of course, is that many people, they tend to get caught up in the everyday existence of this realm, and, well, they soon start directing their lives as if there was no God. And so we got to realize, well, that we're really not in as much control of our lives as we may think. James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. "Come now, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow we shall go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit,' yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, 'If the Lord wills, we shall live and also do this or that.' But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin." So what James is pointing out is the arrogance of people, and especially Christian people, who plan their lives without considering God and recognizing that ultimately He's the one who's sovereign in this world. And so all of our plans should be qualified by that understanding, by that mindset. And so we need to prayerfully plan the future. Okay, So we're to make the most of our time with setting priorities, planning, and prayer, but with what exactly should we fill our time? I mean, how do we accomplish this New Year's resolution to look more like Jesus by the end of 2017? Well, there are some necessary steps we're going to have to take, and we're going to need to be disciplined in them. We're going to have to build some good habits that we need to form, and then there are some bad habits that we need to get rid of. Now, some people like to describe habits as like grooves or ruts in our brains and behavior. And so, you see, we stay in the well-worn grooves because it's easy. And we can form new grooves, but it takes effort. It takes self-control. We've got to choose to push ourselves out of our comfort zones. And it's often said that it takes about a month of continual practice to form a new habit. And I've also heard that it usually takes about a month to break an old habit. Now, some research suggests that it takes a bit longer. But that's really not too difficult if you have the resolve and you keep your eyes on the goal. I mean, we sure don't want this New Year's resolution to end up like so many others and to be forgotten. So I'd like to give you a few suggestions now here on goals and necessary steps and habits that we need to get into if we're going to accomplish this New Year's resolution. Now, a few years ago, when the churches merged, okay, we adopted a motto. You might call it a mission statement. And it's to help keep us focused. Seek, grow, serve, love. And of course, that's our website, seekgrowservelove.org. Now, these are four things. They're not just important for a church, they're also important for the individual Christian. So that's what I'm going to be suggesting for this year. So first, seek. Now, obviously, we're told in the scriptures to seek God. But we're also told to seek the lost, as Jesus did, Luke 19:10. We are given the Great Commission. We are told to be salt and light, and so forth. So, how can we do that? Well, first, we need to be mindful of the people around us, those who are watching us, and those who need to hear the gospel. Now, don't be a wild-eyed religious fanatic, but keep your eyes and your ears open for opportunities to say something for Christ or to invite someone to church. I mean, you might want to keep some of the church cards on you, or maybe some of the copies of the house-to-house, heart-to-heart in your car. Just a suggestion. And start praying that God will open up doors of opportunity for you to share the gospel, to be a good influence. Paul asked them to pray for that in Colossians 4:3. As has been said, we are a walking Bible, the only Bible some people will ever read. And so we've got to be that salt of the earth and light of the world. And I think it would be good if all of us here today made the goal to try to convert one person to the Lord in this next year. At least make the goal. Next, grow. Well, as a church, we're obviously trying to grow numerically. But as an individual, we are to grow in our relationship with God and in our knowledge of His Word. So how can we do that? Well, if you're able, make sure you're here whenever the church gets together to study and worship. You see, if God's people were meeting at 9:30 and 10:30 and 5 o'clock on Sunday and 6:30 on Wednesday, where would Jesus be? You know where He'd be. As Lloyd likes to point out, you remove a coal from the fire and the rest of the coals, well, it quickly becomes black and cold. Same is true for a Christian. Get back in with the other coals. Well, also, schedule time for prayer and time to read and meditate on God's Word. Man does not live by bread alone. I mean, how are we going to know what God expects of us if we don't listen to what He said? Now, I recommend picking a time and a place and starting with just a chapter a day to build the habit. I mean, you don't have to do like my wife and read through the entire Bible in 90 days. Something she did once, that she's done before. There are a few different reading schedules that Jeff has put on our website, and so you might want to pick one of those. And then sign up on our new Bible reading chart that I just put outside of my office over there in the hallway. So we can check it off as you go along. Everyone can see how you're doing. So, why is that important, having a Bible reading chart? It's kind of silly. Well, think about it this way. Okay, when I go to the gym, I usually just, if I'm going by myself, What do? I work out a little while. I work out till I get tired and I go home. But what happens if I'm working out with someone else? See, I don't want to look like a wimp. And so I'm going to try and push that much longer and that much harder. And so if we make ourselves accountable to one another, we can all see how we're checking it off. Well, I think then that we'll try that much harder. All right, then we find our next one is serve. Jesus washed people's feet, John chapter 13. He told his disciples that they want to be great. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be great, but he said, if you want to be great, you got to be a servant. So how can we do that? Well, be kind and helpful. Look for ways to meet others' needs. Dorcas in Acts chapter 9 is a good example. Schedule time to show hospitality to your fellow Christians and others. You know, invite people over from time to time. Hospitality is a very important concept in the Bible, both Old Testament and New. Look for opportunities to help one another physically. Okay, if a brother or sister is sick, well, you might want to take them some soup. If a brother or sister is moving or needs some help with a project, that is a perfect opportunity. In Galatians chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, Paul said, "Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of the faith." And the last one is love. Now abides faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love. 1 Corinthians 13. Colossians 3:14, after talking about some Christian qualities, it says, "Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity." So how can we do that? Well, obviously it's going to overlap a little bit with the last one, but here's some suggestions. All right, look for opportunities for edification. See, building one another up. Sometimes something very simple like a kind word or a card can make all the difference in the world, or visiting someone in the hospital. Build your relationship with your spouse. You know, plan and schedule time and activities to be together. Maybe even read a book, a new book on marriage, or go to Andy's Wednesday night class on marriage. And then fulfill your responsibility as a parent. You know, it's been said that children spell love T-I-M-E. Schedule time for teaching and experiences, time for fun, time for devotionals and Bible study, and of course, model the behavior you expect. Honor your parents, part of which is taking care of them in their old age. And be a good and loyal friend. You know, be honest, a good listener. Be there when they need you. So these are just some things that can help get us on that middle path. And so, you know, getting our spiritual lives in order, it is within our reach. But it's going to take some resolve and discipline. You see, knowing what we need to do, that's obviously not going to cut it. That's only half the battle, according to G.I. Joe. The other half is guns and lasers and ninjas. No. It's you need to actually have the self-discipline to do it. See, it's much more difficult to be hindered. When our eyes are properly set on that goal, you know, that goal that we know is worthy, and we look to the example of others. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. It says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart." You see, nothing is going to interfere with your forward progress, your forward motion, and stumbling blocks, no, they'll simply be used as stepping stones. Of course, we just got to remember that change is a process, not an event. Baby steps. And so here's my encouragement for today. We need to be looking forward to unwrapping those 365 presents that we're going to receive this next year. and then be good stewards and use them in ways intended by God. And so this year, let's really pursue excellence. And let's determine to make the most of each day that the Lord has given to you and me. If there are any spiritual needs this morning, we want to give you the opportunity. If you'd like the prayers of the congregation, or if you need to be baptized into Christ, if there's any spiritual needs, anything you need to make right or make known, you can come forward now as we stand and sing.